It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
Live from our national studios here in Accra, and linking up with all our regional FM stations and also on the internet, we say welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program where we speak to the experts and newsmakers on the issues. My name is Kingsley Odinchere. For tonight, 2012 budget statement and the revised income tax provisions. What is the view of organized labor? Is the provision on agriculture in the budget enough to enhance its activities? And what are the social policy interventions as captured in the 2012 budget? All these to be explored. As Behind the News, and as usual, we encourage you to send in your comments and contributions to 026-441-8767. 026-441-8767. And we want to move on to our first story. When the 2012 fiscal policy was being presented yesterday in Parliament, public sector workers were probably eager to know how it will impact on their income. The group which champions the interests of workers, especially those in the public sector, is the Ghana Trades Union Congress. Is the union happy about the revised income tax threshold? Dr. Yalba is the Deputy Secretary General of the Ghana TUC and has joined us on the line. Good evening, sir. You are welcome.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
From your perspective, what should a Ghanaian worker be saying about the new threshold?
Yes, the threshold moved from 1,008 to 1,140. This is about 43% increase. what it means is that if you are earning 120 Ghana cedis a month, you will not pay income tax. And this moved from 84 Ghana cedis a month. So that is quite a jump. And this is going to benefit a lot of low-income earners. So as you say, low-income earners must be very happy about it.
Yeah. When you say low-income earners are going to be happy, some are also saying perhaps it's a pay-as-you-earn policy, but they are still paying so much. Is there something that you want to raise there?
Yes. I mean, if you look at taxation generally, whether you're low income earner or not, if you buy something that has VAT on it, you're all going to pay. So VAT is it's not fair. It's not a fair tax. It's the same across income groups. So if you add all this up, then I should say that we would have been better off if the threshold had been higher. But at least we have something to hold now. It was not like this. We managed to get this from 2005, when government agreed that minimum wage earners should not pay income tax. But if you remember, it took from 2006 up to 2009. The threshold was about 20 Ghana cedis a month, which was nothing. So 2009, it moved to 84 Ghana cedis a month threshold, and now it has moved to 120. So gradually, we are moving on, and this is not the last time that the threshold will go up. So as we move, if of course we expect a more significant move, but this is better than nothing.
Dr. Yalba, the concern from some quarters is that organized labor bears the brunt of taxes, and you have a lot of other people generating so much and not paying as to what they should also contribute. Can something be done to widen the net, maybe from the TUC perspective, so that it will bring some relief to organized labor too?
Yes, in fact, the budget mentioned that. The minister mentioned that if you look at the tax from self-employed people, what we call the informal sector, it contributes just about 4% of total income tax revenue. And they are going to put in place in 2012 to ensure that that share goes to 8%. Again, it's so low. I mean, if you consider that over 80% of Ghanaians are in the informal economy, 66% of Ghanaian workforce is self-employed. And if they are contributing just 4%, that means that there's something fundamentally wrong. But I am confident that once government has realized this is not the right thing, it's very, very unfair, especially when you consider other things like the National Health Insurance, we are paying 2.5% from our social security contribution, and others are paying just the social. If you put all these things together, the system is very unfair to former sector workers, and for that matter, trade union members. So we expect more on this. But I think something was mentioned. Moving from 4% to 8% is quite a significant move. It's doubled. But because the base is so low, people don't see. But I think it's a small step in the right direction.
Yeah. Coming to other areas of the budget, where do you think, from your perspective as Ghana TUC, will need some other critical action?
There are many areas that we think government, and for that matter, Ghana should do better. Let me mention just one thing that when I was listening to the news, I heard my friend at the Chamber of Mines said that they are not happy, if I got it right, because I just tuned in.
Yeah, that's it. They mentioned it.
A tax of 10%. We welcome that. We also welcome the increase from 25% to 35% for the mining company. These natural resources are for Ghana. And so all the companies that are in Ghana, that are investing in Ghana, they are welcome. But they should know that we should have a fair share from the resources that we have. And I think government has been bold enough, and we are very happy about that, that at least for once, our government has been bold enough to say that this is our resource, we need to benefit a lot more from that. We also have noted the policies that government outlined on agriculture, food especially. And we think that, again, this is the right step in the right direction. On public sector pay, we note that government is still going to make sure there is fairness in public sector pay administration under the single smile point. We have gone quite far, and I think the only option was to come to go to the logical conclusion of that process. We are hoping that government has made enough provisions to pay our arrears, to pay the increase for 2012, and that there will not be any arrears to negotiate payments come 2012. There are other critical issues which we expected government to address in a more concise and a more direct manner, and that has to do with employment. We have the assurance that come 2012, they are going to give us targets on employment. We are waiting for that. We are hoping that all these projects that were outlined in the budget, because we don't still have the details and we are still studying the budget, so that we can assess the impact, the potential impact of employment. We are hoping that employment, not just employment, but also decent employment will be created out of all these projects.
Yeah. You've spoken about some of the critical areas for you, but we've heard different descriptions of this budget. From the GTUC perspective, what is the nature of it? At least you've had an overall view.
Yes, just a bird view, but what I said was that we need to study this a bit more. We haven't had the time. This budget was read only yesterday. So we are studying the budget, and then we will come out with our hands on the budget shortly.
Yeah. Dr. Yaba, before we let you go, sometimes some people do not hear about the processes, even though in some quarters it is advertised for them to make an input. For GTUC, what do you think should be done with subsequent budgets for people to really make that needed input before we start discussing after the budget is out?
Yes, it started some time ago when government started asking for input. And we have always, every year, made the effort to send something to government. In some cases, we haven't had some of the issues raised reflected in the budget. We have heard some other NGOs and individuals saying the same thing. The only way government can get people to be interested in the process is to get this to them early enough. Because the process starts earlier than everybody thinks. So by the time you realize and you say, I have an issue, it's already somewhere around July, August, September. And around that time, if you are not careful, your issues will not be raised, or your issues will not reflect. I think government will get to us early enough and tell us that yes, the budget process has started, and also get the institutions involved. And here I'm referring particularly to the local government. People have a lot of ideas down there in the district. And if the district can solicit views there at the district level and collate all these views and send to the ministry, I'm sure those kind of concerns will receive attention. And this year, I should say that government, apart from asking for input, actually organized a meeting with us so that we could present this input, not only us, but also other interested parties. And a number of issues, and employment issues, and I'm not surprised government now, for the first time in many years, have put a statement that they are going to now come up with targets on employment. This was informed by the discussions at the ministry. And I'm sure in the coming years, many more individuals, many more institutions will get involved and try to bring their ideas. Because government gradually is showing that they are interested in our ideas.
Dr. Yaba, I want to thank you very much for sharing some of your concerns here with us. That is the Deputy Secretary General of the Ghana Trades Union Congress. But agriculture is one of the sectors that is receiving some attention in this budget. Joining us on the line is Philip Abayori, the President of the National Farmers and Fishermen Award Winners Association of Ghana, to know his perspective on whatever is going to the sector. Good evening, sir.
Fine evening. Thank you.
You have taken a deeper look, at least in relation to agric. What is your general view?
Areas relating to irrigation have been mentioned, and we think that is a very laudable one, that we are having some input directly to support irrigation. Secondly, the training aspect of it, where there's going to be training of our fisher folk. We thought that it should extend not only to fisher folk, but the farmers, and also technical support for tractor operators and other auxiliary staff for the agricultural sector. You know, the Minister of Agriculture is overshadowed with implementation of various projects, and looking at it, if they don't have those, massive personnel to be able to cover all the areas. So what we thought is that the training aspect is good, so that at least we can train farmers to also undertake some of these support services.
Yes.
Another area we looked at is the fertilizer subsidies. But what is missing is that we do not have what we call direct capacity building of our farmers and fishermen. We think that in the previous request that they made for us to make inputs, we requested that we needed capacity building to be able to bring our own equipment. Just like when GPTRU started, they were supported by government to bring starter buses. Today they are on their own. But we think that the agricultural sector is overled by government all the time, and it's also burdensome. So we thought that in the next budget, they should put in something, at least we should have something for capacity building for the farmer-based organizations, and also support so that we can import technology and equipment for our work. But for now, what they have put in place, we think that anything at all that government do to support the agriculture, we are happy to see it, but we need more, so that at least our capacity is built, so that at least we can produce more and also be competitive in the market.
Yeah, you speak about capacity building, and some are saying that sometimes it's not just the intentions, but ensuring that even if it's little that is committed, it gets to the sector. What are you going to do to monitor exactly what gets in there so that you support that process?
You see, the issue in agriculture, we have many issues. One is that currently, as I speak to you, agricultural financing is an issue. 4% of total national average goes to agriculture credit, and that is not enough for us. The cost of borrowing for agriculture has not been designated at all. If the farmers, we are going to borrow money, it's going to be 10 or 12%. We borrow at all the rates that everybody borrows. Meanwhile, we are supposed to guarantee national food security. Government is subsidizing fertilizer, putting irrigation systems, major infrastructure. But if our capacity is weak, we don't have the capital to be able to do the work. Government will not always achieve its objective. So we are thinking that in the next budget, we should have something for us. But look, farmers, we have contracted a loan of this amount of money for you to buy equipment. We are signing a contract for 5 years. Take it and pay. Farmers, we are going to support you to have what we call storage facilities. And this is guaranteed by government. so at the end of the day, you pay back, so that at least we can also be seen employing large chunk of the people. Agriculture has a vast area of employment, but we can't even pay the people because we do not have that, I mean, cash flow. So this is an issue, but I think that for now, having government trying to support in processing of fish where they are setting up a fishing processing plant is good. The landing sites, if they are able to put it, it is good because our fishermen struggle. They lost their boat sometime. I mean, they want to pack, you come and pack the rocks, you come and destroy the boat. And if there's a landing site, a proper landing site, very well hygienic, and then the fishermen can land properly, and then there are facilities there, it is also good. With at least schools so that our children, self-help children, can be educated. And then the training aspect of the technical that the fishermen are trained of modern practices of fishing, which I think is also a good idea. But I wanted to extend even to most of the agriculture sector where we should have tractor operators that are trained, mechanics that are trained purposely for tractors, and then people that can fabricate equipment for us. Yes, of course, I can walk to any shop, like I have my car, they will repair it to me. I should be able to walk to a place and they will make a planter for me. I should be able to walk to a technical place and they will manufacture a spraying machine for me. So it shouldn't be that we need to import everything and making things very expensive for our farmers and we are not able to compete. So we think that this is what we need in addition.
Yes.
So far, we are okay with the areas that government is supporting, but only we need it to be extended so that we feel the impact ourselves physically.
Yeah. Mr. Abayori, earlier you might have heard Dr. Yalban talking about the fact that they were at meetings prior to this budget so that they will make an input. Were you brought into during the preparations?
Yeah, into the preparation, we had an opportunity to make, the private sector test invited us and we made some inputs. But we are seeing that a lot of our inputs have not come into the budget and we can't blame government for that. I would think that next budget, we're going to make our presentation directly to the government, not through any intermediary.
What were the key ones, apart from those you've mentioned, that you thought should have been added?
The input we made was one, we talked about this the deficit in the fish that we have, which is 400 metric tons. And thought that if government intervened in the fishery sector, we should be able to get the 400,000 metric tons to augment what we are importing, which will give work to the fisher folk across the coastline. So if now they are going to put the landing site is one of it, and they will put they will put processing equipment there so that we don't lose whatever. Sometime when there's a glut, we are not able to store. It's a good thing. Secondly, we also complain about irrigation because if you look at the rainfall pattern, climate change is creating a lot of problems, and we cannot create major irrigation systems. So that was also another area that we thought that if they intervene, it would be good. But we spoke about agricultural credit, and then also capacity building for FBOs, and then also supporting us with grants and also facilities to be able to import our equipment. These have not been inputted in the government in the budget. But we think that we don't know whether when we did a coalition, something went wrong somewhere and it didn't get to government. But we made it.
Yeah.
Some of these things that are coming are in.
As you talk about the FBOs, how do you see the contributions made so far by the MIDA initiatives around the country?
There's a lot of farmer-based organizations. You have the cocoa sector, you have a very vibrant farmer-based organization there, you have the award winners, you have various farmer-based organizations, you have the poultry farmers. See, if you look at the budget that government will be giving to the Minister of Agri to do the work across the country, and we are sitting here doing the same thing and we are not getting any support. We are contributing, but we can't contribute so much like what government is doing to be able to, solve the problems that we want to solve. But we are doing the same thing. So if there is some support to build our capacity, to be able to move our offices, to be able to engage properly, it will help. It will reduce the burden on government. Extension services, you have 5,000 farmers to one extension officer. So we currently are doing something by also, transferring technology and whatever we have learned from the extension officers to farmers. As I speak to you, our association widely, we are looking at 1.5 million farmers that we have in our reach. But we don't have any budget. If we can have our capacity being built in the regional level, district level, then we can make agricultural extension 2-1-1 or 2-1. So government now don't need to even waste their time saying they are going to employ more people. We will do the rest of it, but our capacity is being built. We will not be taking salary.
Okay.
But for now, government has to be taking care of all of us. Now the resources are thin, and at the end of the day, we are not able to get our problems. So we think that the government needs to look at it next budget.
Yeah. Mr. Abayori, I will hold you on for a moment as we try to bring in the head of budget at the Ministry of Food and Agriculture, Dr. Daniel Ohimim Boatin. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Yes, you've heard Mr. Philip Abayori talking about the issues and the inputs and what they think should be added. Being at the ministry, what do you see about the budget, especially in relation to Agric?
Thank you. I must begin by saying that the budget has been looked at critically after the presentation by the Honorable Minister for Finance. We had a lot of input into the portion of the agriculture section. What will not come out clearly is the request that the ministry made in terms of what we need for our operations next year. Out of the total amount that we requested, the ministry has been given only 39% of our requirement for our operations for next year. So you may see that with this, we cannot implement fully what we planned to do next year. I heard Mr. Abayori talking about irrigation. I must say that the request for irrigation for this year was fully catered for in our budget. Because when we had a ceiling initially, we have to prioritize. So we prioritize for programs that will benefit our main clients, that is the farmers. These are the fertilizer subsidy and the seed subsidy program. We have what we call the ABSEC, the Agriculture Mechanization Services Center. We also budgeted for the strategic talks for food stars for food security. We've also budgeted for our youth in agri program. I must say that the youth in agri program has four components: the block farm, the livestock and poultry program, aquaculture program, and agribusiness program. And then we also catered for fully the National Food Buffer Stock Company's operations for next year.
Yeah, so for all this, you are talking about 39% of the budget you submitted.
No, yeah, 39% of the budget. So
we're asking, what will be your main thrust for next year, looking at the fact that you didn't get all that you wanted?
That's what I enumerated earlier on, that our main thrust will be productivity improvement programs. And these are the fertilizer and seed subsidy program, the irrigation program, youth in agri program, and then our cultural mechanism services programs, as well as the operation of the National Buffer Stock Company.
Okay. Mr. Daniel Ohimim Boatin, I want to thank you very much. But coming back to you, Mr. Abayori, you've heard that the ministry itself did not get all that it wanted. So will you say something else, or maybe you can also assist them in some way to go up?
I'm happy that you have heard that they got only 39% of what they requested for their operations. And you are aware too that according to GDP contribution, they said agriculture is now not like leading. It's now the service sector. And this is a clear indication, because if projections are made to meet targets and then the support that is supposed to come doesn't come, you don't expect the ministry or the agricultural sector to be able to continue to lead. So I will urge government to put in a lot, to be bold enough to put a lot of resources into the sector. Let the ministry have its requirement, and then also look at building the capacity of the producers, industry, and also, industry. And then put the major infrastructure in place. What that is going to do is that it will trigger a lot of employment avenues for people. And that will really move our country faster. But if we continue to look at agriculture to be on donor funding, if you look at the 39% he's talking about, if you go through it seriously, you see that 20% is donor funded, okay? So if you are only using about 19% to finance your agriculture and being a country, you realize that you will not be able to achieve whatever you want to achieve. So we think that more resources should be channeled into the sector so that it can employ more of the people technically, so that the sector can improve to more deliver, so that at least we will have national force security and also be able to.
Okay. Mr. Philip Abayiri, I want to thank you very much for joining us on the program tonight. Sir Philip Abayiri is the president of the National Farmers and Fishermen Award Winners Association of Ghana. It's behind the news, live on Ubunu 96.5 and also on Radio Apowers together with Yura Radio. Behind the news, live from our national studios here in Accra. And if you are in Kofodia, you are getting us live on Sunrise FM and Radio BR Sunyai together with Radio Central in Cape Coast and Volta Star Radio. Who some of your tests here before we move on. Baba Musa UDS is saying the 2012 budget is a budget that will ensure infrastructural growth and job creation for accelerated development, and it will be a budget to retire Nanado from active politics. And Mama Vieri, Upper West Region, is saying suffering poverty and diseases tears in the face in the villages throughout Ghana, but government claims single-digit inflation. Do we need money in our pockets or single digits? NDC has failed Ghanaians. Ghanaians are anxiously waiting for 2012. And Alassane Zanduli is saying there is nothing new in the budget. The NDC government has only deceived the good people of Ghana, but I can assure you that we shall also deceive them by showing them the exit come 2012. And Abungo Kintampo is saying, wow, what a fast-growing budget. We have the NDC government and shall remain in power after the 2012 general elections. Jacob Woman Pondown, the opposition must appreciate the efforts of the government because one day the opposition too will be in government. Sadi Sakara is saying the NDC government has presented its last budget under President Mills. The political savior Nanado will give Ghanaians a budget of prosperity in 2013. And Kek from Domia Christ saying, I'm happy about the budget. Professor Mills, God will help you to win again. And Napoleon Sumakuri, 2012 budget is the most accurate and effective so far. Behind the news, and we are moving on with our stories. Ghana, as a developing economy, has to adopt a number of social interventions to improve the living standard of the marginalized. ISODEC is a civil society group which advocates better social policies for Ghanaians. Daniel Chachu is a policy analyst with ISODEC, and we want to explore with him some of the social interventions that should be added to the budget. Good evening, Daniel.
Good evening.
Generally, from the ISODEC perspective and looking at marginalization and those who should be assisted, how did you see the 2012 budget statement?
Well, with reference to the improvement of the welfare of Ghanaians, for that matter, social policy, we can make reference to some positive developments or intentions as far as government programs for 2012 is concerned. And here we can mention programs in the education, in the health sectors, programs in the water and sanitation sectors. There is a commitment to continuing and expanding the LEAP. There are programs under the National Youth Employment to make sure that the young people who do not have the privilege of continuing education have some access to some employment avenues. To be specific on the area of education, while we see efforts to provide, continue the provision of free exercise books, free uniforms, continuation of the capitation grants, and the expansion of the school feeding program to cover about 1 million children. We see these as positive. The concern, though, is that in the allocations for 2012 for the education sector, we realize that the share as a percentage of total expenditure has declined. That's declined from around 25% this year to 21% next year. I mean, we are not too sure why this is the case, because it is very clear that government states that education, health are some of these key social sector areas that it would want to channel a major chunk of its resources to. And therefore, we would need a response from government as far as this decline is concerned. And there's also an issue of the allocations to the implementation of the school feeding program. Now, you would realize that about 60 million Ghana cedis has been allocated for the year 2012. Now, that same amount was allocated for 2011. Again, it begs the question as to whether there's not going to be expansion, because in terms of numbers, government makes reference to the fact that it's going to increase the number of children accessing the school feeding program. However, in terms of budgetary allocation, it seems that the same amount has been allocated for next year. We would require some response from government, and if it's an error, we would expect government to make the necessary correction. Let me talk about a bit more about the education sector. We find education as very important as far as the human resource development of the country is concerned. Now, as far as education expenditure is concerned, we have made some progress. So we are talking about an increase in actual education spending from around 6% of GDP in 2002 to around 10% of GDP in 2008, and recently the numbers hover around that region. Now, this is a very good performance, and indeed, we are above the global education for all goals target of 6%. This is positive. Now, however, when you look at some key indices of educational outcomes, there are concerns which we want to talk about. Now, when you take, for instance, the basic education certificate examination, we have to say that the performance has been stagnant for the last few years, indeed from 2002, again to 2008, we have seen a trend around 61% to 62% pass rate from junior high to senior high school. Indeed, this year it dropped.
And do you link the budget directly to this fall?
Now, it's important to recognize the fact that the budgets are allocated to the sector to meet specific intended objectives. Under the Education Sector Strategic Plan, one of the objectives is to improve education access. We are making some progress there. Another is to ensure that we have improvements in education quality. This means ensuring that we have the right caliber of teachers in the classroom. We have the necessary teaching and learning materials, including textbooks. You know, we have the necessary infrastructure. Now, if these things are not adequately provided, it impacts on the ability to deliver quality education. And therefore, the inputs are very, very important when it comes to determining, you know, the outcomes in the education sector.
Yeah. So, from all that you are raising, you in ISODEC believe that perhaps something more can be done for the education sector. Is that it?
True.
But the other concern is that sometimes investment in that sector will have a chunk going into emoluments. What do you see?
Yes, that has been a challenge that, as a country, has to be looked at more carefully. It's important for workers to be paid for the value of work they deliver. That is very important. However, it's in the key point here is that the output that is expected from these workers must be exacted. In other words, there must be adequate supervision to ensure that the performance required is seen. Now, I'll just give some specific examples. So, what would be the benefit if you have people being paid and not staying in the classrooms to teach. Obviously, that will not augur well for what we expect in the education sector. Indeed, it's been found that some parents in some rural communities refuse to send their children to school when they realize that, you know, the teachers who are supposed to be in the classrooms are not administering the classroom, or they are sending out these pupils to buy stuff in town or to work on the farms, etc., etc. So while it's important for people to be paid well, it's equally important to ensure that the necessary supervision is done so that they can deliver the expected, you know, output or the expected responsibilities that is given to them. Having said that, we are glad that portions of the oil revenue, that is the annual budget funding amount, is in the 2012 is going to be allocated to providing education infrastructure, that's reducing the number of schools under trees. This is very, very important because during the rainy season, school activities are disrupted, you know, in communities that do not have the requisite school infrastructure. So while it's important to pay teachers and, for that matter, the human resource in the education sector very well, it's also very important to look at the other dimensions of delivering quality, that is the investment and then also monitoring and monitoring and supervision of teachers, as I have mentioned already.
Okay. Daniel Church, we want to thank you for your input too. As a policy analyst with ISUDEC, but the Deputy Minister of Finance, Seth Tekwe, has been following the discussions as raised so far and has joined us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
You've heard from different quarters. What is your response to the various issues raised?
It follows a very, very quick zero. We are 5%, 10%. Most taxpayers who earn anything up to 300, I'm just looking for the numbers, you know, will actually not pay a tax in excess on the additional income beyond the 1,400, a tax beyond 10%. You know, so that is another, you know, relief that is in the bands, you know, that have been adjusted. The other point that we need to also emphasize is when we talk about the self-employed, we are actually talking about what in taxation you call the hard to tax. And they are made up of two categories. There are the SMEs, very small businesses, but you also have professionals. And the minister addressed these two groups. For the professionals, they are capable of keeping records. They are capable of paying taxes at higher income bands, that they normally are very poor taxpayers as well. You know, and therefore for this group, the GRA will be intensifying its efforts towards, you know, making sure that they are brought into the tax, you know, net. But for the very small taxpayers, when you talk about small self-employed taxpayers, I think we also need to bear in mind that they pay taxes under the same schedule as employees. And therefore, it is often wrong to look at their total turnover or profit in estimating the amount of tax that they have to pay. Because like the employee, they are also entitled to the 1,400 exemption that, you know, we are talking about, you know, now, the 1,440 exemption that we are talking about. And therefore, for those small taxpayers, you know, apart from benefiting from, you know, the increase in the tax-free threshold and the bands, these taxpayers are the ones who are also going to benefit from, you know, the threshold, the increase in the VAT threshold. There are two policies there. The threshold has been increased from 90,000 to 120,000. What it means is that you have to make an annual turnover of 120,000 Ghana cedis to be registered under the normal VAT regime, where you are required to keep, you know, proper records, you know, and account for the VAT. But for those who be below the 120,000, the real initiative is that what you used to be called the flat rate VAT, and then what used to be the personal presumptive tax, which these taxpayers pay, have been combined into one, and that is the 6%, which the minister announced. And this is on turnover. And what this means is that you don't have to calculate, you know, go into all the nitty-gritty of calculating your profit, keeping expense records, you know, and the rest, some of who use maybe, you know, their houses for their businesses. All you have to do is to calculate 6% of your sales. Turnover simply means sales, you know, and then that is the tax that you pay. So it is also an effort to simplify the tax regime, you know, for these small taxpayers, in addition to making sure that they get the appropriate relief that we are talking about. I think there was enough said about, you know,
Yes, hello. Please go on. Yes.
There was also enough said about the interaction that goes on. Yes, the budget process starts as early as May or June, but that is the time when the Ministry of Finance issues the guidelines, you know, to the ministries, departments, and agencies, and gets their input. I mean, this is what, this is the essence of what your discussion with the director from Ministry of Agric, you know, was about. The initial input, you know, in some cases, you can call it a wish list. Frankly, it is just like a household budget.
Mm-hmm.
The children would want to have everything, you know, under the sun. But the family has, you know, a fixed income. And like the mission, you also have a fixed income. So after this initial round, you know, the what he called the ceilings are issued to tell, the, you know, all the ministries, departments, and agencies that government can only operate within a certain threshold. And therefore, sometimes the reduction may be as significant as was mentioned. And
yeah.
Therefore, it is only after this initial, you know, rounds of data gathering and government's own estimation of what and then GRA brings in the estimates of revenues that we are going to get, that the government is in a position to do the consultation. And therefore, the consultation cannot begin as early as May. You know, in as much as I have said that, I think that the points are well made. I think we have been trying to improve the processes of consultation through organizations like PEF, as was mentioned, you know, the miners association and the rest. And this process will be improved. This year it has been improved. This is something that has been done over a long period of time. The NGOs and others are also consulted.
Yeah. Mr. Tekwa, just to come in here, I'll allow you to continue. But some are saying that sometimes some key and very vital areas of the economy get too much slash in terms of what they are given, even though we are looking at a national kitty that should be able to cater for all. What informs it?
Well, the budget, you know, is prepared under a lot of circumstances. And let me give you two examples. The minister indicated that last year, for example, you know, we had to pay 3 billion. You know, we've been carrying out an exercise, you know, whereby we are beginning to document all the contracts that are in the system, some of which were awarded many, many years back. And you know that we went into the market to even issue bonds to liquidate some of these arrears. A hefty 3 billion. If your income is 15 billion as is this year and you spend 3 billion, that's about a fifth was used to clear those arrears. Then we also know, and these are arrears owed to contractors. We also know that there are the arrears, you know, that had to be paid, you know, on a single spine, which as the minister indicated, you know, is taking about 41% of 41.2% of your domestic revenue. This is a significant amount of money. That means that your internal domestic revenue is left with 60%, barely 60%, to meet your infrastructure needs, to meet your maintenance needs, you know, to meet all other needs. It is out of this amount that we also have the earmarked revenues. Allocations are made to the District Assembly's Common Fund under law, National Health Insurance Levy, GET Fund. These are earmarked revenues. And so when you have done all this, you know, you have to live within, you know, the limits of what is left. These are some of the pressures, you know, that you face when you prepare the budget. And therefore, if, you know, as a result of gathering all this information, you want to finish the roads which have been left, you know, as an eyesore over, say, 5 or 6 years, you know, then that means that something must give. And this is where sometimes, you know, MDAs do not get all their allocations. A budget does not mean that you can envisage everything that, you know, has to happen during the course of the year, and you can make adjustments. So when you give, make this type of adjustment, it could be, for example, that school feeding, instead of 16 million, probably got 45 or 55, you know, million. And therefore, when you actually allocate another 16 million, it may actually mean that you are increasing it. I'm addressing the issue that has been made.
Hmm.
And that's because you couldn't, you know, allocate the entire amount that you, because of these measures that we are talking about. It also raises an issue. You will recall that when His Excellency directed that all these projects that are an eyesore, you know, should be cleared off the books so that they should be completed and funds were allocated towards it, the government came under pressure as not initiating its own projects, but, you know, completing projects which previous administrations started. Sometimes this type of pressure leads to, you know, projects, existing projects being less than done whilst new projects are started. And this is where we begin to have, you know, other types of pressure. You know, we have been consistent in clearing those areas whilst containing, you know, those contracts. And nonetheless, going into next year, because of the additional resources that will be available from the oil and gas, and the directive that they must be spent on infrastructure, in addition to the resources that are coming from the CDB loan, we are able to invest in infrastructure with a view to accelerating growth. First, secondly, adding value to the oil and gas, because the real benefit of the oil and gas is in processing the gas.
Okay, Mr. Tekwe, just a moment, I'll come back to you in a jiffy, but quickly, as we move on the line, we have joining us Bernard Mona, General Secretary of the PNC, for a quick comment on the budget. Bernard, good evening. Hello, Bernard.
Hello, sir.
Yes. You are looking at the budget, and you've been studying exactly what has gone on so far. What is your main concern with it?
Well, I have described this as a moderate budget. In that there are some pluses and minuses, it is expected to do. It also appears that most of projects, particularly captured in 2011, have not been completed, and therefore they have been recaptured in the 2012 budget. And that simply tells that as a nation, we should be realistic rather than over-ambitious as is contained in the budget. I applaud that. Particularly on the tax aspect, if you look at the tax brackets for the value-added tax that has been increased from 90,000 to 120,000, I think it's good for businesses with less capital that they pay a presumptive tax of 6%. Though on the high side, I think, compared with value-added tax, we think that is an incentive for small businesses. We also think that the personal income tax brackets also show an improvement that lower income earners will actually benefit from the new dispensation. And of particular importance to me is the mining tax. You realize that it's been increased from 25% to 30%. And I'm looking at a situation where it could have even been increased more, given that our revenues from gold actually is almost 5%, and 95% is consumed by those who are in England, in Australia, in the United States, playing golf. And so I think that such a tax is also an incentive. What I still don't understand is why our governments do not find it necessary to encapsulate shea butter into or expand the frontiers of shea butter. I was listening in Parliament and I have gone through, and it does appear that the mention of shea butter is in here at all, it's in person. And we know that shea butter has so much economic benefit, so much to it, that it is amazing that our government is not giving premium to it as it's done to cocoa. And that's why I have persistently called that, look, let's have a shea butter board distinct from the cocoa board, so that we'll be able to give premium to it. I have insisted that if you take the growth rate that we are projecting for 2011, at about 18%, it is largely influenced by oil revenue, and secondly by cocoa. Cocoa sector has grown by 14%. And cocoa, Kinsley, I'm sure that when you look up today, you've not taken any cocoa beverage. I'm sure the deputy minister has not taken a cocoa beverage. Clearly, Ghanaians do not consume so much of the cocoa we produce. It is a product that largely is a dessert for the Canada man. And if at any point in time there is a shift in taste of our cocoa, What it means is that our economy will come crashing when indeed we could have relied heavily on the share industry and ensure that we are able to expand. From the infrastructure level, the least said about it, it's about 80% of the infrastructure development that we are looking at are urban based. Well, communities are denied their share.
I think we lost Bernard on the line. Bernard, we'll try to get back to you, but you mentioned something, and the issue is that ambition really should be the launch pad to greatness, but when we manage to get to you. But Mr. Tekwe, you've heard the other concern that is coming on board.
Well, yes. Look, I don't think that the intention of the government was to punish the mining sector. In as much as we would want a mining sector to also pay its fair share of, you know, of taxes. The mining sector still has the incentives, you know, to invest. Those incentives have not been rolled back. You know, all that we are saying is that we need to be realistic. All assessments, including assessments by the World Bank, indicates that, you know, the mining sector is not paying as much as, you know, it should. But then it is important to also move towards value added,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is what is being done. Just as we are aiming to do value added in you know, with oil and gas, and we have been doing value added with cocoa. I think that, you know, things like good processing plants and the rest can also add value and translate into more benefits, you know, to the economy. So it is a collection of, you know, of measures, because we do not also want to send an anti-investment, you know, message, because the mining sector requires that, you know, requires heavy investment. Then we are in competition with other areas like Russia, you know,
for this investment. Mr. Tepe, just a moment. I think somebody, it is biting him, and he sent this test. Said we don't have any analysts looking at social welfare and development for persons with disabilities. Please ask for it. For us, budget is always small for that sector. The person did not add the name, but I think I can guess where it's coming from. What do you do with that sector? Social welfare.
Yes, I do not have the details now, but I believe that if you go to the section on the Ministry of Social Welfare, when the, you know, detailed budget comes out, you will get, you know, some initiatives, you know.
Perhaps we'll book you on that particular one so that they get some attention to you. Yes. But you were wrapping up for us because of our time.
Yes, I was saying that when we also look at certain allocations, particularly for education and health, you know, I would appeal, which is in response to the point raised by today. I think we should also realize that most of the earmarked funds are going to this sector. The GET fund is going into education and is doing a lot in education. National Health Insurance is going into health and is doing a lot in the health sector. Similarly, the disassembly, much of the disassembly's common fund is also going into education and health by the district assembly. And also the point about interacting at the local level, yes, that is the essence of the decentralization and the composite budgeting approach, you know, that is being, you know, taken. So overall, you know, let me say that, you know, the budget is balanced towards the pressures that I have mentioned. It is balanced towards looking forward and making sure that we invest in infrastructure so that we can improve even on the decaying infrastructure, such as the Western Railway Line, which is the most commercial of our infrastructure as far as roads and railways are concerned, the port facilities.
Okay.
It is also not true that much of the investment is geared towards urban. In fact, under the CBD facility, for example, which has been highlighted, we have the docking site, which is one of the concerns that was raised. We also have the irrigation, you know, and we also have the connecting roads, you know, that are part of the border craft lanes and the border, you know, enclave. We have the SADA initiative.
Mr. Tekwe, you know, the SADA is a big area. That's why we've not even touched on it, so that we can get much more time to look at it in some.
Yes.
But for now, because of our time, I want to thank you so much for responding to our call tonight.
I appreciate, you know, the opportunity.
That's the Deputy Minister of Finance, Seth Tekwe, clarifying a few issues for us. But as you can see, issues like social welfare and all are still crying for some attention. So we'll try to get him back to respond on some of those issues for us. Behind the news, quickly before we go, the budget statement for 2012 was not in favor of the agri sector. I hope government will take a second look at it. Hajia Fati Safiano, best woman farmer in Kwantan North, is saying, when will MPP commend NDC for the good work they are doing for Ghana, Tanka, Obam, Zuna, and Swala Vanyo? Indeed, the 2012 budget is the best in recent times. The budget will surely return Nanado from active politics. Eyu Farouk from Tamale says so. And Jacob Wu is saying, to make Ghana self-sufficient in food production, more money should be pumped into more dams to be constructed. And Sule, the government should not neglect inland canoe fishing as if that does not contribute to our well-being. And the 2012 budget is just a repetition of promises. Upper West Region was promised an ultra-modern hospital and agric mechanization centers in all districts in 2011, but nothing happened. Fatal and why is saying so. The discussions will certainly continue wherever you are, but we'll try to bring you some of the other very important ones in subsequent programs. But this is where we wrap it all up for tonight. At the controls for us, we had Nina Isoa, the production crew, Christopher Sidu, Bright Agama, Edmond Tete, and Edmond Asarifa, summarizer, Jonathan Thompson, Abraham Asari, I should say. My name is Kingsley Avintre.